January 29th, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development. Good morning and welcome to everyone. I see we have a rather a busy audience this morning. Thank you all for coming out. Just to kind of preview this, we're going to be taking a look from a business perspective and all in terms of view towards workforce development. And we're also going to take a look at the role that our community colleges play, an exceedingly important role. And I'm pleased to note that I have one of my constituents who will be presenting here today on that as well. Before we move into the informational meeting, I'd like to turn it over to Kevin just briefly for some information for the subcommittee members. Kevin?
Thank you, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. Yesterday afternoon, I forwarded to each of your offices a copy of some information provided by Greg White that was discussed in response to Representative Holby's questions about definitions of high wage. As I said, I indicate are forwarded by email to each of you, so it's not sitting before you right now in the interest of cutting down on some paper consumption. But this is essentially information talking about how high wage is defined, and also by careers has a fair amount of information. Again, this was provided by Greg White. Look at it at your leisure. We would just want to go ahead and get this entered as an exhibit from the meeting if you don't have any objection to it. So.
And that information is broken down on a regional basis?
I believe that it is broken down on a basis. I don't believe it's actually on a regional basis, but it is based on demand and the nature of the different jobs and professions and whatnot. So we can explore that further if the committee so desires.
Okay.
We just want to make sure that that was something that was brought to all of your attention.
Great, and our committee expresses its appreciation for Greg White's efforts in producing that, and for Representative Holby for having requested it. Should be valuable information. With that, I'm going to open the informational hearing and call up first for the business perspective. As a panel, I think folks would prefer to do that. Marion Haynes, John Marshall, and Mike Dewey, if you would please come forward. Good morning, and welcome to our committee, to each of you. We certainly appreciate your making yourselves available. Thank you, and please proceed on your own determination here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall, representing Associated Oregon Industries, and we've tried, the three of us, to coordinate our testimony. And what I'm going to do is start off with sort of a 30,000-foot view of our perspective of workforce and certain educational components. Marion's going to talk about a little bit of on-the-ground stuff, and we're going to have Mike back clean up and correct probably the numerous errors that we leave you with. AOI's interest in education and workforce is obviously a highly educated and highly skilled workforce. Not only for, and obviously an adequately funded infrastructure to get us there. And it's not only because we want an adequate pool of workers to help us in our businesses, but we recognize that in order for Oregon to be competitive in a global economy, we're going to need that kind of skill and talent in order for us to compete effectively. And also, we look at our community as a whole. Obviously, if our workers are educated and well-trained and successful, then there are obviously social benefits that are derived from that. So we're looking for secure, productive employees, and hopefully that will lead to prosperity for all. As a little bit of background, most of my career was spent in the K-12 world, and I joined AOI in about a couple months into the 07 session and worked primarily on tax and fiscal issues. AOI in the past has had an agenda on specific education issues, but as far as an overall education and workforce strategy, I think, frankly, they were a little weak in that area. So I was asked to staff a committee to look at education and workforce issues and see what role we might play. We convened 16 members on an education workforce policy committee. There was broad-based representation representing a variety of sectors and geographic regions in wood products, high-tech and metals manufacturing, utilities, healthcare, and construction. And the charge to this group was first to survey the policy landscape. There's a lot of good work that's been done out there, and we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. Look at that landscape and assess existing plans for improvement in the system, identify change agent opportunities and possible collaborations, and then develop a strategy for change. Over the last 16 months, that committee has looked at every segment from pre-kindergarten to higher education and a number of workforce interests. Manufacturing 21, Workforce Investment Board, both state and local, Manufacturing Steering Committee, and others. And what we came up with were a number of policy priorities, high school graduation requirements, pre-kindergarten, the career readiness certificate, some targeted investments, affordability of our system, as well as capacity. But I'd like to comment on just three, as I suggested earlier, from a 30,000-foot level, and then hopefully in the question and answer period we can get into some more detail. But the first issue that we embraced and strongly support is the concept of the 40-40-20 educational attainment goal. And as you recall, that means that at some point in the future, I think the governor suggested 2025, that 40% of our citizens would have a bachelor's degree or higher, 40% would have some kind of post-secondary, a credential, license, or associate degree, and 20% would have a high school diploma, a career readiness certificate, GED, or some equivalent. According to the data, our current status indicates we're about halfway there, so we have a lot of work to do. But we believe that that educational attainment is important in, from a workforce perspective, to prepare our citizens for productive employment, and particularly in the kind of employment in this information age that's out there, which we consider, which I would term more brain employment or brain work than from the industrial age, the brawn work. And we would hope, particularly Representative Huffman and Representative Dembro, those of you that are on the Education Committee, that every step you take, you will look and try to judge the extent to which it moves us towards that goal. Some suggest that it's unattainable, but I think we should certainly be able to measure progress in terms of making sure our kids get out of high school with that high school diploma, that they're well prepared for the next step, and high school diploma is no longer an end, it's a means to the next step, and so forth. The next area is support system, or just we support greater system alignment. There doesn't seem to be a seamlessness between these silos that we've created. We have a K-12 system. We have a community college system. We have a higher education system. And it should be, it's certainly no news to you that too often those segments tend to compete with each other for the same limited resources. And so we believe that there should be steps to take, and I wish I could be more specific, and I will in a minute, but there should be steps taken to make that system more student-centered rather than system-centered the way it is. And there seem to us to be barriers that stand in the way of moving students through that system seamlessly. For example, a student in high school, particularly probably their senior year, that may have completed their graduation requirements, they ought to be able to begin to take classes that will earn them college credit, either for the associate degree, credential, or four-year degree. There are a number of students that are already doing that, but we believe there are still barriers exist to allow that to happen. Applied transfers. You heard at your last meeting about a new program up at Columbia Gorge Community College on wind technology. and the possibility for a student to earn a one-year credential or certificate or a two-year associate degree. If a student starts down that road and realize they have an aptitude for math and science and think, wow, I want to get into engineering, and they've already started that coursework, to what extent is that coursework transferable if they want to go to Oregon State, for example, and get an engineering degree? We believe, and I think some testimony will show, that there are barriers that stand in the way of the ability to transfer and move seamlessly into the next step that the student may wish to take. And the last issue in the alignment has to do with statewide access. What does the student in Medford do if they're interested in the wave technology from Tillamook or the wind technology in Columbia Gorge? To what extent are they able to access that? Is that an issue of distance learning? Does that student have to wait until that program is developed in Medford? We ought to figure out ways that we don't necessarily duplicate programs, but programs that were nationally recognized as the wind technology was up in the Dalles, then that ought to be accessible by students all over the state. And finally, the system reorganization. It didn't take our committee long in looking at workforce to realize that it's a complex puzzle and that there are a whole lot of moving parts and that there are often competing agendas and priorities, and all of these components seem to be chasing the same limited dollars. And they all have a workforce mission. You heard a partial list: economic development, BOLI, employment, community college and workforce development, K-12, the university system, local workforce investment boards, local city and county workforce programs. And I guess the question that we ask is it as coordinated as it could be? Is it as responsive as it could be to the needs of business in terms of employment? And I guess another way of put it is, are the right people on the bus? Do they all agree on the destination? And who the heck's doing the driving? And are there accountability mechanisms in place to measure results? These are a number of resources from a variety of different places that come into the system, but where are the way that we measure those results and determine those programs that are working and how they might be replicated, and those that aren't and how they might be replaced? And finally, are we getting the biggest bang out for our buck in terms of the efficient use of those limited resources? We heard some information that suggests that these economic development regions we have around the state are not coterminous or aren't the same as the Workforce Investment Board regions. So that doesn't seem to us to make a heck of a lot of sense in terms of being responsive to the needs of a business. And finally, a number of sessions ago, there, when economic development was a big issue, there was an attempt to create an inventory of buildable land. So if a business wanted to locate here or expand here, they could go to the Economic Development Department, and they had an inventory of shovel-ready land, a one-stop permitting process. Well, that's one factor of production, land. Where's that same angle for dealing with workforce issues? If a business wants to locate here, where's the one-stop place that they can go and find out exactly, list the kinds of employees they need and how they can find them or train them, or where's the infrastructure to train them as quickly as possible? Commissioner Avakian, as I said, has a proposal, and we're anxious to engage in that discussion and debate and see if there's not a better way to reorganize the system to create that efficiency out the other end. In conclusion, about a year ago, we held a series of meetings around the state with business leaders, and we asked them, what are the highest priorities that you have right now, the biggest issues that you're concerned about? Number one were health care costs and escalating health care costs and how to be able to afford those for their employees. And the second issue is workforce. how are we, where's the pool? The pipeline's empty. How are we going to replace these baby boomer retirees? And where's the infrastructure to make sure that, that we have that pool of employees when we're ready? Obviously, I think if you'd ask those same folks that same question today, they would suggest that it's not so much workforce needs in the future, it's how we maintain profitability and keep the employees we have or hire back the employees we forced to lay off. And while we're facing a circumstance of limited resources, we're hopeful that as you and your colleagues look at this structure, that we can build a foundation that will prepare us for the kind of recovery that we hope will come, and it certainly will, and we're all hopeful it will be there sooner or later. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much. Committee members, would you prefer to ask questions now individually or wait until they've finished as a panel?
I'd like to make an observation so that as we proceed,
It's not a question for John, but John brings up a good point, Mr. Chair. A point that's always extremely important to me, that the state's not duplicating efforts and that we're fully integrated in all of our systems. And I know James and Cam could probably answer this because they've certainly been on OWIB longer than I have, but as we look at restructuring the Oregon Workforce Investment Board in the makeup of its members, to just know that we are integrating partners from other entities that are all working on workforce development. And I don't know that we have actually addressed that in the makeup of OWIB, and I'd just like to know that as we do that, that the proposed membership that we're heading towards or we're trying to head towards does that. It has partners on there that include all of the entities working on this same 40-40-20 goal, workforce development, et cetera.
And I think, Vice Chair Hoffman, we're going to have a good opportunity to have that very discussion when we review the reorg bill. So that should be a good discussion, and I would encourage our partners to be here and to be part of that discussion when we hold that. So, additional questions or comments? John, thank you very much. I congratulate you and AOI on your efforts in conducting first the survey, and then all of your follow up efforts. It's just a tremendous job, and I think that it is very insightful that you have helped to prepare the groundwork for us as a state to move forward on, in the whole arena of workforce development. Thank you so much for those efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Who's next?
I am.
Hey.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Marion Haynes, and I'm with the Oregon Business Association. We share a lot of the comments that John made when we talked to our member businesses, with almost no differentiation among industry, business, size, or location. Workforce is at or near the top of the list in the challenges that businesses are facing. We have persistently high unemployment and paradoxically face a labor shortage in those jobs that require high skills, whether those are blue-collar or white-collar jobs, degreed or non-degreed. And the shortage will be exacerbated with the retirement of the baby boom generation. There are, whether it's health industry, utility linesmen and women, skilled engineers or gaps, there are or welders, there are skills gaps in the jobs that are available and the skills that workers have. Our economy is becoming more and more knowledge-driven. Metal workers compete based on sophisticated proprietary designs and engineering. Wood products industries have retooled to produce a diverse range of value-added products. Logistics jobs are very high technical jobs now. We're not just lifting pallets in a warehouse anymore. They're managing complex supply chains to deliver Oregon products nationally and internationally. internationally. So the kinds of skills that we require in this economy are different than what they used to be, and as I said, very knowledge-driven. So preparing that workforce is important. We very much agree with the comments that John made and support the 40-40-20 goals and alignment of the system. It really is a system that we need to look at. K-12 community colleges are critical, and the university system. I think the business community has really developed a level of consensus around the things that we need to do to prepare our workforce to meet the needs of businesses in the future. One of the areas that we've looked at is making targeted investments in those job opportunities that we do see in the future. Manufacturing. The manufacturing workforce education needs range from basic job competency skills to higher level technical expertise. To achieve this, workforce education should be integrated into high school and the transitions between high school, career technical education, community college, and four-year undergraduate education must be strengthened, as John mentioned. Engineering is also critical. The investments in ETIC have been phenomenal, and it's important that we continue to try to increase the number of engineers that we're graduating. Vestas, for example, their headquarters is likely locating in the Portland area, but their R&D facility was, they chose to move to Texas because the university system there is graduating level the numbers of engineers that we simply don't have here that they needed for that facility. Clean technology, Oregon is fast becoming a leader in and has the opportunity to create numerous jobs over the next 20 years in emerging clean technology industries, such as renewable energy, green building design and services, and smart grid technology. We have a lot of core competencies around this area, and I think with the direction of the federal administration, we see this as a real opportunity area for Oregon. Healthcare, we need to make investments in assuring that we have the doctors, nurses, and allied health professionals that we need. The supply of physicians, dentists, and nurses is decreasing while the population is increasing and aging. Between March 2007 and 2008, Oregon's healthcare labor market grew an additional 5,600 jobs, and even with the slowdown in the economy, the overall jobs that we're predicted to need is expected to grow 27% by 2016. Combine these investments in manufacturing, engineering, clean technology, and healthcare will increase opportunities for Oregonians to pursue rewarding technical careers and strengthen Oregon industries and our ability to compete in the global marketplace. The last issue that I want to address is the Career Readiness Certificate, which we're very excited about. This is a program that's used in the eastern part of the country quite a bit. Essentially, the certificate provides an assessment, a ranking of skills that job seekers have. They can use it as a credential going to the business. It creates a common understanding of the skill sets needed in order to match a worker with a job. We have members that have facilities throughout the country that have used this extensively in other areas, and it's a very, very valuable tool for them. One thing that John mentioned was, how do you know whether you have the kind of workforce that you need, like the shovel-ready sites? And in Virginia, for example, they have a database that has all the information from workers and their career readiness certificate skills levels, so that you can go there and you know what kind of a workforce is out there, what skills they have, and whether that matches up with the needs of your business. So I think I'll end my comments there. The 40-40-20, we support. The alignment is critical, and really focusing our investments on the jobs that we see coming in the future and the Career Readiness Certificate, which helps make those connections between employers and job seekers, are critical. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Subcommittee members, questions or comments? Marion, I think... as important as are all of your positive findings, I'm concerned about your mention of a lost opportunity with Vestas, and I'm wondering if you are personally knowledgeable about why we lost their R&D to Texas, because that kind of lost opportunity is one that our state can ill afford.
I don't know that you could say it was only because of the number of engineers, but that is one of the things that we've heard that led to that decision. I mean, employers base their location decisions on a number of factors. Workforce is but one of those. But my understanding is that we simply didn't have the numbers of engineers to do the kind of R&D work that they needed for that facility. Again, don't think that was the only reason. There are numerous factors that go into that kind of a decision, but that's why the investments in ETIC, they've been very successful. We need to keep working on that. So those kinds of jobs are going to be critical.
Do you happen to know whether the state was aware in advance or whether in the workforce and economic development community that it was broadly known that that Vestas was faced with a shortage and considering moving to Texas? I'm just wondering where we fell short, what we could have done, whether we had put Vestas in contact perhaps with folks at Portland State or Oregon State where they may have found the necessary talent.
I can't answer that question specifically, but I wouldn't want to give the impression that things like that don't happen. There have been other examples, and I hope I'm not misspeaking. I believe it was Genentech when they moved into the Portland region, where there was a very tight connection with the economic development professionals, with the local workforce investment board, and aligning what they need, working with the community colleges to develop the kind of programs that they need. So those kinds of things do happen. I can't speak specifically to what happened in the Vestas situation.
And I realize I may well be asking questions that you're not in a position to be able to know, but committee members, I think this is a critical piece of information that we need to know. And Kevin, if we could task you with finding out where we may have fallen short here, we cannot afford to allow these things to happen, particularly with cutting edge technology and the kind of companies that really are going to, in many instances, be the future of this state's economy. So, if you would, and certainly appreciate your information very much. Representative Esquivel, did you have?
Yes, many factors come into location of a facility, and I assume they had to build a facility in order to accommodate their R&D, or did they do it on campus? That's the question of some campus. But if they had to build. What we need to do in this state is we're talking about shovel ready, permit ready. That's very, very difficult in this state. Be quite candid with you, we had a firm down in Medford that took them over 5 years to get a building permit. And when you stand in the way of progress with a 5-year impediment on them acquiring a business permit, a permit to build their facility, something's wrong. So there's many, many factors that enter into this. Another one they ask for is, when I've been involved with, is what's your workman's comp rate? What is your energy rate? What is your educational availability for? And that played a big part here. But you will probably find it'll be 4 or 5 factors.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. And I think in the global marketplace, we've seen that if you are not ready to go, somebody else out there, someplace in the world, is going to eat your lunch. And we cannot allow that to continue to happen. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Mike, your
thank
your
you,
turn.
Mike Dewey, representing NFIB. I want to thank the administrator for having the Kleenex close by. You're very good at finding out what's going on in the world. I have a slight cold.
Would you go to the back of the room and speak?
Or just hold your breath.
I want to introduce Jenna Kaluza, who's in the back of the room. She is the state manager for NFIB, and she might raise her hand. You've seen her before in the building a year, 2 years ago. With the Home Builders Association, she started on Monday. And so she's getting up to speed on all these issues. And I think I want to make some observations first. As you know, NFIB represents the smaller employers in the state of Oregon and nationally. And in this recession and all other recessions, it is not large manufacturing companies that are going to lead us out of this dismal situation. It will be small employers, small companies. And there is a significant trickle down from a 10-employee office to a 5 to a 2. It is amazing just in terms of how that multiplier effect works. So in some ways, we try to attract, and the Vestas is a great example of a sustainable company, and we need to move in that direction. But we've got to be careful about what we try and go after and how much time we spend on trying to get at 1,000 jobs. And clearly, because we see what's happening to Caterpillar, my client, IBM, you don't hear too much about it, doing very well, but shredding some jobs, which is very sad. I think Mr. Marshall made a good observation that you need to see what is the duplication in this marketplace, because it is a marketplace. And I commend Commissioner Avakian for putting, I'm not sure exactly what this is going to look like, but I do hope we take a look at what is the duplication and what is the cost. And you also have a conundrum between job creation and workforce development, in the sense that it doesn't make any difference whether or not you've had people prepared to get into the workforce or retrain people if they're not jobs. And I'll talk about some political consequences in a few minutes. For NFIB, what we hear, and this is more anecdotal, is that some of the workforce, one, isn't ready. There isn't a work ethic. There isn't the character. When I say work ethic, maybe not arriving on time and so forth. And over time, you can work on that. But nonetheless, I think in part that's because we have a dropout rate that we need to address. That's part of that. And so this is, you know, in part not only making people ready, but to have a work ethic to work. An observation, and I've done some work for higher ed, and we want to fund K-12, we want to fund community colleges, and we want to fund higher ed. But they all work together. They're not separate silos. And Mr. Marshall made, I think, a good observation that we need to make sure that these programs work together, and if somebody needs to get from senior year to community college as quick as possible, we ought to do that, in part because the cost of education is such that it's going to save them some money. We think you need to engage the private sector and ask what's going on. Marion talked about health care, and I've got a health care company that I represent, and they decided that there weren't enough dental hygienists, so they went with Eastern Oregon State College University, and they developed a hygiene school there. And they did it not because they're going to make any money. It's because there were not enough hygienists in Eastern Oregon. And so most of the individuals that came into the curriculum were from Eastern Oregon and arguably were going to stay in Eastern Oregon. Bob Russell was talking about the truckers. They have a program with the Oregon Truckers Association, Clackamas Community College. In your district, there's a company that has, with Clackamas Community College, because welding is in demand, and the way we do welding is changing, scholarships for welding. So engaging the private sector is extremely important. Also, I make an observation that we talk about family wage jobs. And what we need to do is make sure that we have in our communities that there is respect for the people that drive trucks. I cringe if I've got a plumbing problem because I can't fix it, and I know it's going to cost me some money. And we need to have electricians and plumbers, and we have to have an ethic that they need to, they're respected, because they're not going away. I mean, those jobs are going to be there. We need to train those people. And we need to figure out ways, notwithstanding apprenticeship laws, to get them into the market as quickly as possible. So I think we need to do that. IT is an area that we need to focus on. The smaller companies have that. Our company, We employ 6-7 people. IT is one of our biggest issues. And that is an area that we can do a lot in terms of employing people, because there's tremendous opportunity. Last, let me just say, in terms of the politics, we want to create jobs. We've got workforce development. The good representative talked about a permit. I would say that you need to, and this is not the committee, but in order for job creation, the land use laws have to work. You have to have infrastructure money in order to have a manufacturing plant. Water and sewer and electricity have to get there. And that's an issue in this state. For manufacturing, I'm just going to say, we've lost our wood mills, our timber mills, in part because we haven't been able to harvest. Now, that's a political issue. But nonetheless, you've got to talk about that as you develop the workforce. Then you've got the green jobs, and that's the wave of the future. There's no question. And we need to move in that arena because of greenhouse emissions and the like for productivity, but you've got to talk about subsidies. Because for a while you have to subsidize certain kinds of jobs. So you've got to be willing to do that, because that's a political situation. I'll finish with being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. The concern was, on workforce development, that we weren't going to have enough people coming up because of the baby boomers retiring. Unfortunately, with 401ks, that's not going to happen as quickly as some people would like, and I use that as tongue-in-cheek. But if you take a look at the duplication in this marketplace, because, again, it is a marketplace, I think you'll be surprised that there's so many players and we can do it a little bit better. I'm not criticizing anybody, but it's essential if this state is going to grow, because people want to move here. There's no question people want to move to the West Coast. And we want them to move here with a job, not without a job. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Mike, thank you very, very much. Members, questions or comments for our entire panel? Vice Chair Huffman, please.
I have a comment, Mr. Chair. Just an observation, and not critical necessarily at all. I wasn't governor at the time, and I'm still not. But anyway, the 40-40-20, the Education Committee and Workforce Development that I've been on for a long time, we've discussed the 40-40-20. The one thing, observation I'd like to make, and I think each of you kind of pinpointed it, maybe it's kind of understood that we are still embracing the certificated programs, the plumbers, the electricians, the BOLI programs that they have and whatnot, but it's not explicit in the 40-40-20. I think we're focusing on community college and university system degrees in that, and I just wanted to point out on record that it's very important to me that out of that 100%, a large share needs to be certificated programs. So anyway,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this is for everyone on the panel, and I actually have a couple of question areas, but I'm going to start with the area that the challenge that we face in the area of basic skills in the state, because as I see it, lack of preparedness on the part of people going to college, going to community college, trying to get into apprenticeship programs, et cetera, is a huge impediment that we face. And, I can't tell you how often in my other life, which is teaching in a community college, I'll have students who I'll meet for the first time, and they're just very, very passionate and excited about coming back to school. And many of them these days want to go into health fields. They really have what it takes to do that, I believe. Many of them have been working as CNAs or, frontline caregivers. And then the first thing they do is take a placement test to assess their skills level, and many of them are placing into eighth grade math, essentially. And, you know, they're looking at a couple of years of remedial education just to, you know, to get to where they need to be. And they do. I mean, it's just remarkable how perseverant people are because they're thinking about their future and their families, et cetera. But, you know, I think that we really need to be thinking hard about K-12 in this area and how we can be more effective. And the, you know, K-12, together with the participation of the entire educational sector, has gone through a process to look at graduation requirements and to figure out ways to strengthen them. And I think is moving in some very good directions along those lines. The challenge, of course, becomes in this budgetary climate now, people are talking about putting off those requirements, particularly with respect to math, where, you know, I think in many cases that's the really critical one in terms of our shortages. And so I'm just wondering where you all are on that and what role the business community can play in keeping our nose to the grindstone in terms of moving forward on standards. Standard, you know, obviously it's not enough to just say the standards are here, reach them. There's, you know, it's going to take support. What do we do about this? Is this a conversation that's happening within your world, this this notion of enhancing graduation requirements as a step in the direction of ultimately producing the kind of workers that Vestas is looking for, you know, more highly skilled technical engineers, et cetera?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dembro, we have heard in our process from the Superintendent of Public Instruction regarding the high school graduation requirements and are strongly supportive of them. And while in this time of financial exigency, it would seem to be easy to back off, we think that would be unwise because, as you say, the students need to be coming out of high school better prepared for their next step. And there are going to be still be a number of students when they leave high school will not pursue that next step. They'll be happy to go into some kind of a position that doesn't require anything beyond that. But even the positions that don't require education beyond a high school diploma still require some fundamental basic skills. And that's why I think we were pleased to see that when in the construction of these graduation requirements, it's not just, you know, meeting some academic level, but it's also to show that you have a series of essential skills, all of which we believe are extremely important for students that are not only going to enter the workforce immediately, perhaps later, but are going to be better prepared for the next steps they take, whether that's the credential, the associate degree, or at some point a four-year degree.
We've heard from your business perspective. It appears entirely universal that remediation is a problem. Just heard from Representative Dembro that among the student population, there's a self-recognition that folks may be inadequately prepared. And Representative Holvey, I think the apprenticeship programs are faced with significant challenges in terms of the amount of time dedicated to remedial efforts.
Was that a cue?
Yeah, teeing it up for you, brother.
Well, you know, I wanted to, I was just trying to take some of this in and thinking about your comments, because I think a lot of your comments are right on target, frankly. You know, the whole idea of getting kids more ready sooner is really important, and I recognize that. And you know, from my perspective, it's
It's at what level of public investment and commitment do, you know, what's the level we need to get to, and what's, where's our money best spent in trying to do that? You know, and having said that, as far as establishing that level, I have to also ask, you know, at what level do we expect the industry and business investment and commitment to that same workforce? You know, so, and I'm not trying to be vague here, but you know, it just kind of bothers me sometimes that you know, as well intended as we are to, you know, do what we can for industries and get the workforce they need, you know, I think we also, with our public dollars, have to be cognizant that we need a level playing field, and that our investments shouldn't be so targeted at a specific industry that it disadvantages their competitors and creates an unlevel playing field, because we essentially subsidize one company at the expense of another. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, it seems like our public investment should be more broader, like, you know, the skills of welding, which are applicable throughout the construction industry at the community college level. They do a great job with many specific skills like that. But overall, you know, I think business and industry have to recognize that there's a piece of the training environment that really needs to be done hands-on on the job. Mm-hmm. And we need to have a commitment of job opportunities for interns, apprentices, or trainees, or whatever you want to call them in a particular industry. You know, they need to have positions available, and I realize they're not as productive as, you know, a fully skilled person, but that on-the-job training is absolutely critical to getting our skill levels to the level that industry needs. And so I say we need a commitment from industry and business to provide those job opportunities in their workplace. Mm-hmm. You know, and the public really needs to, you know, make their investment and commitment to getting them ready to get to that level. But certainly I think business and industry can't just expect, you know, a top-level skilled employee ready to go out of high school. I just don't think we're going to get there. So it's that level that I think we need to define. Mm-hmm. Of investment from both sides.
Mike, if I may, I think the observation is that for a number of businesses, they basically want somebody who's ready to work, that has some competent skills, and they will say, okay, now I don't want you to train that person, I want to train the person, because it may be very unique, and that happens all the time. And then there is the other part of that, the subpart of that, is the continuing education, and there are businesses all over this state that reinvest in their workforce. And they do that because they want them, one, to be productive, they want to be more productive, and they don't want them to move on. So you have that all the time in terms of continuing education. Industries that get together for workshops or whatever the case may be. So they do that. But you're right. Sometimes we rely and say, okay, it's your job to provide us the person, and we don't get the right person, we don't like the system. This is a complex system.
And, Mr. Chair, if I might, I hope you will pose this question to the folks that will follow us from the community colleges, but there are any number of public-private partnerships between business and the community colleges relating to exactly getting those students ready to work Boeing and Mount Hood Community College. There's a metals initiative down in with Lynn Benton Community College, and I'm sure they could list many others where the business has made the investment along with the public community colleges to try to work together to prepare students for the jobs that they have available.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Huffman, and then Representative Esquivel, and then Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I promise I will try to keep this from sounding like a political statement. There is a serious question in this. But as we are looking at a significant size bonding package indebtedness for the state, under a lot of it under the title of stimulus and job creation. Have the business groups in Oregon done a study? If you could have a dream come true, or we could grant you a wish, and let's say that the state was willing and able to put out a $250 million bonding package, and that money were invested solely in the idea of long-range family wage workforce training and development, what would the landscape look like if we were able to do that and invest stimulus dollars in workforce training? Has there been any studies done about if the state of Oregon invested a dollar in workforce training, private business in Oregon could return how much back into the economy in what period of time? Did you hear a question in there?
Representative Huffman, I think if an issue that we've thought about in terms of the needs out there, and if we had the resources, I think it can be, it's one word, and that's capacity. I think in this environment, there's a great demand for young people to train, to do something better. To build a career. And again, I think for the community colleges, you'll hear we have a demand out there, but we don't have the capacity. We either don't have the physical facility, we don't have the resources to hire the instructors, and if we had the resources, even though there aren't those instructors in Oregon, we could do nationwide searches and get them to come here. So I think that's an issue of it's really an issue of capacity. And if we had the resources, I would suggest that's probably where they ought to go. As far as any kind of a study, I don't know, but I think that I don't want to. I'll close there.
Well, we've recently done studies on infrastructure needs throughout the state,
mm-hmm.
and counties and cities were asked to submit their list so that we could get an idea of how much infrastructure need there was out there. So, along the lines of this capacity, has business put a dollar figure on what they think it would take, what kind of investment into capacity to increase that pipeline or whatever to meet the needs out there?
Mr. Chairman, no, we've not.
Okay.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, this kind of dovetails into a couple of things that I've been involved with. One is that you talk to most people in community colleges, and one of their biggest classes that has the biggest demand is remedial reading and comprehension and remedial math skills. The kids that are coming out of K through 12 may have a theory of mathematics, but practicality falls way short. I happened to be, when Rogue Community College came to Jackson County, I was asked to be on the curriculum committee to craft out some sort of a curriculum level for that college. And it was very surprising. We had business people at the table, and what came out of the business people astounded me. And that was, have a class that we can teach our youngsters to be responsible for their job, to show up to work on time, and to be able to balance their checkbook. I was amazed. But they were serious. The business community indicated at that time that, yes, they would be willing to come forth and be a partnership in some sort of a program. The workforce development meeting that I had set on a couple of years ago down in Southern Oregon brought out another startling fact to me. They said that at that time there was about 1,400, and that's just in Jackson County, 1,400 family wage jobs that were unfulfilled. And the question was, well, why don't you fill them? And this is what the reasoning was. The people we get, the applicants we get, we receive, do not have a basic math skill level. They cannot read and comprehend well. So therefore, it's very difficult for us to teach these people. But more importantly, a lot of them can't pass a drug test. Those are the issues we need to work on, and business is aware of it. I think our community colleges are aware of it. I think they're up to the task. But what we need to do, which we've talked about on this committee, is we're going to try to get the high schools, the community college, and the business people and labor people together to craft some kind of a program to where we have a seamless transition between high school and into the workforce. And we have to stop degrading people because they don't go to college.
I'd just like to tie together a couple of things that Representatives Esquivel and Holvey have both brought up. And I think in many instances today, our youth don't have the informal job opportunities that that many of us, you know, one generation removed had. I mean, not even an opportunity to go and mow somebody's lawn. I mean, those opportunities are diminished, and it's that lack of opportunity. I think in many instances, Representative Esquivel, that means that those students and our future workforce really have little association with the world of work. It reminds me of what the subcommittee's chair said, Representative Schaffler. You know, when you bring that brand new apprentice onto the job site, they don't know when they're supposed to show up to work at 6:30 a.m. that 6:30 a.m. doesn't mean 6:40; it means 6:20. That's when you show up ready for work. And so I think that as you have pointed out, Representative Holvey, at every turn, at every opportunity, we need to begin to find ways that we can familiarize students and youth with work and with work obligations, because they're showing up at the employer's front door and it's a whole new world to them. They've never had a job before. And, you know, it's another instance. It's another example. None of us are born with the knowledge to do most things. We have to learn it. We have to be associated with it. And we have to find those avenues and those opportunities to continue to associate folks with the world of work. So, Representative Holvey, you make an extremely good and important point. Mm-hmm. If you need to follow up, Representative Holvey, I did have Representative Dembro here.
If you just want to follow up on this point, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What I have to say can certainly wait.
Okay, well, I will follow up on that point, though, although that's not the main point I'm going to make. But, you know, just one other element that we have to remember is, you know, sometimes there's just an age factor here. You know, that is my... in my own experience in the community colleges, you know, we often have people who are coming to us similar to, you know, the kind of profile that Representative Esquivel is describing. And when they leave us, they're quite different. Now, I would like to think that's because of the brilliance of our teaching and the quality of our service, and I'm sure that's true to a great extent. But a lot of it is just that... you know, some of these young people, when they first started a trade or they first started college, they just weren't ready. And so there is also, I think, an age and experience factor as well that we have to be prepared for. But what I wanted to go back to is the concern about avoiding duplication and bringing the education training system into alignment. And I really applaud your comments on that. I think it really is important. As a little pushback on that, though, my sense is that the business and industry community is kind of out of alignment on these issues, is really all over the place in terms of commitment to supporting education in general, whether it's supporting incumbent workers through their lifelong learning. You know, some companies are doing a superb job of that, others are not. Whether it's just, you know, support for, you know, helping us fund our programs all over the education continuum, et cetera. And I'm just wondering if there are other states out there that you would say are real models for this, you know, where the business industry community has really come together with a sort of master plan for how we can support education at all levels so that we can guarantee a skilled workforce. Or would you disagree with my my observation?
Mike Dewey, for the record, this is just going to be off the top of my head in terms of states that seem to maybe have gotten it right. I think more rural states do because there's more of a connection to community. When you get into the large metropolitan area, it's a little bit more difficult for you to find your niche. So I look at, you know, Iowa, I think, has done pretty well. South Dakota and North Dakota. Nobody is immune to this recession by any means. North Carolina, to a degree, has gotten it right on the triangle. Texas has gotten it right to a large degree. Let me say, though, about, you know, just the workforce and the work ethic. This didn't happen yesterday. I mean, it's. I mean, I think we all, as we get older, we think the generation coming up is slacking off a little bit. You know, so you know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. We did it a little bit differently, but nonetheless, you make a good point about the duplication, and I think the key is. You know, let's find out where it is. How can business interact in this process better? Because we're on it together. But other states, I think, if you know, we can point to other states that we think are getting it a little bit better.
Thank you very much. I'm going to recognize Representative Holvey here in just a moment, but before I do, I want to recognize the addition to our audience, the McMinnville Area Chamber of Commerce. I think we've had about a dozen and a half people, it looks like, walk in. We're discussing workforce development. Our three panelists here are business representatives, both large and small, and just kind of a snapshot overview. As Mike Dewey from National Federation of Independent Business has characterized it, we're taking a look at how we fill the pipeline with a adequately trained workforce. So we very much appreciate your presence here and by your presence support for workforce development in our state. Welcome and thank you. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really enjoy this conversation. It's extremely critical to us, but I wanted to make maybe just an observation, you know, going back to a few comments I made earlier and some comments that Representative Esquivel has made, as well as Dimbro. Maybe we've all made those comments, I guess, if I start thinking about it, but... you know, when we talk about, you know, getting that pipeline filled, we have, you know, we go to, you know, the community colleges, extremely important that, you know, they're able to, you know, play a huge part in this. They're absolutely crucial. And apprenticeship programs and, you know, getting that initial trainee, that job opportunity is extremely important, too. But I think it's important to recognize that one of the things we just touched on is that students, before they even get to that initial job opportunity, have to have that preparation. They have to have those basic skills and knowledge that are needed in the particular job workplace they go to. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, talking about looking at models in other places to see how we can better prepare this. And we always come back to the lack of, you know, vocational education or the you know, opportunities for kids to experience work, which I referred to as, you know, the lack of job opportunities for interns and apprentices, you know, with our industries and schools. But I just wanted to bring to the chair's attention, as I talked to the administrator day before yesterday about that, is that we, you know, since we've moved away from vocational education in our high schools, largely due to a lack of investment, you know, from my perspective, in our education system, we also don't have those summer opportunities for kids to experience. And it brings to mind that, because I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with an organization called Northwest Youth Corps, and it's not associated with the Oregon Youth Authority, so I just want to make that clear. But they are in my area in Lane County, but they attract students from all over the state to work basically on contracts with the Forest Service or fishing game, and they do, you know, noxious weeds, trails, parks, and they learn how to run equipment and build things, and you know, and this is sort of at the high school level. And the kids that go through these summer programs and come out of there, it's just an incredible I guess transition that you see these kids going through. And from there, then they've got a feel for different opportunities that are out there and end up going to community colleges and really excelling at a particular field they get interested in, whether it's monitoring streams and biology or habitat or construction or working in the forest or, you know, those sorts of things. And in that particular program, it has absolutely no public funds going into it and struggles because of a lack of interest, I guess, from, you know, the public to and business as well to help them out from time to time. And they basically compete out there on public contracts, which is a really tough venue for them to compete in. And they try to get opportunities from other state programs, but are really, they're sort of dealt out. And it's just troubling to me that I see a program that's doing so much good and is such a great model. These kids go all over the Northwest, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, California. And, you know, that program serves kids from all over this state. And it's just, you know, I guess they must have 50 vehicles where they launch every summer and send kids out all over the Northwest to do projects. Just an incredible operation. And I'd like this committee to invite them here to go over something that does work. And I think it addresses the issue that we're looking at is how do you get kids that experience, you know, before they come to the community college or before they come to an apprenticeship program or a particular industry to try to get those specific skills. Sorry that took so long.
Oh, Representative Holby, thank you very much. And in fact, Kevin has already written himself a note here, tasking himself with inviting those folks in. So thank you so much for that suggestion. Additional questions or comments? I'd just like to close here and thank you all so very, very much for the work that you've done, because it is critically important. As chair, it's difficult scheduling folks. There are so many others that we would like to hear from, and I frankly regret not having enough time to have had labor follow up with what you have said, because we're going to hear is it the next time?
Yes, Chairman Witt, labor organizations will be coming in and speaking next Tuesday, actually.
But we're going to hear, I know this because I've talked to them, essentially the same things that you have told us, and it's critically important, because one of the things that we're going to be taking a look at is how we form the kind of integration that all of you have talked about repeatedly here this morning with our education system. And Representatives Esquivel and Dembro are going to be meeting with Kevin here to go over some of the preliminaries in terms of how this committee can work with the Education Committee. We're going to bore down on this subject. And Marion, I want you to know that Kevin's going to be looking into the situation here of how it is that we lost Vestas, because we are not going to continue to lose opportunities to provide employers in this state the very kind of infrastructure, be it physical or education or otherwise. We are not going to continue to lose this to other states. It's not saying that we aren't doing a job, but it is suggestive that we need to do a better job. And I think that this will be illustrative of some of the things that we haven't done and need to be doing better. So I thank you for bringing that up. I thank you for all of the work that you're doing, and your presentation today was spot on, and it was great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Next, the community college's perspective on workforce development as well as their role. And I'd like to call you folks, it is a panel, Camille Preuss, Nan Poppy, and John Carnahan. Please come forward. Welcome to each of you. Cam's appeared before us before, but welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Camille Preuss. I am the director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. With me this morning are two community college presidents. I thought the best way to communicate the role of community colleges in workforce development was not to have me talk about the theory of it, but to have them talk about the reality of it. And so with me this morning is President John Carnahan from Tillamook Bay Community College and President Nan Poppy from the Extended Learning Campus at Portland Community College. And I did want to, while I have the microphone, assure Representative Huffman that I have lots of responses to the previous panel, and I want to, if they're still here, I doubt it, but want to just extend my thanks to a set of business leaders who are engaged in workforce development in a very sincere and positive way. The interaction, the urging, the sometimes contradiction, complaints, concerns that are raised are not ignored, I would say. And so I want to first appreciate their real passion for being able to talk about the demand side of the equation while we work diligently to meet that on the supply side. But to Representative Huffman's question about or concern about 40-40-20, I just want to make sure that you understand that the middle 40, which is that section that the community colleges feel that they have some ownership to and responsibility for, does include associate degrees and professional certification. I can't even say it. So in that particular 40% are 1-year certificates from community colleges as well as private providers, apprenticeship, and other certifications that are I guess recognized by the industry.
Thank you, Cam, and I appreciate that. I think oftentimes, because the last couple of weeks we've talked about 40-40-20 a lot, and I think we have a tendency to abbreviate that middle section a little too much, and I appreciate you pointing out that it is inclusive of the apprenticeship-type certificated programs, et cetera, and so on. Thank you.
Right. And Mr. Chair, can I just say, one of the other dangers with the 40-40-20 model that many of us have talked about is that it be seen as a seamless continuum, right? You go to high school, you go to community college, and then you go to baccalaureate or something along those lines. But students in this state and in this country are much more complicated than that, and many of them are circling back and just doing all sorts of strange and wonderful things that I'm sure Dr. Poppe is going to talk about.
Thank you, Representative Dembro. So the committee knows within the community colleges have spent about the last year and a half looking at how students flow in and out of community colleges, how prepared they come to us, and how we can increase their success once they come through the door. And I have had the privilege of working with both Representative Dembro and President Poppe as they bring their different perspectives to the table as we talk about student success. So I am certain, Representative Dembro, that President Poppe will cover at least some of that. So my role here was just to introduce the topic, and I'm going to turn it over to President Poppe.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us in to talk about the role of community colleges in workforce development. As we heard earlier, certainly I think we can all agree that our future here as Oregonians is directly tied to the quality of our workforce. Collectively, all 17 of Oregon's community colleges are the major workforce training provider in this state. You know, I think if you look at the LMI data out for the next decade, one of the important things to realize is that our greatest challenge in terms of this pipeline is going to be to make sure that we can fill what's referred to as middle-skill jobs, and those are jobs that require some training past high school, but less than a baccalaureate. And that's where our greatest challenge is going to be in terms of not only replacement jobs because of the baby boomers retiring, but certainly new job creation also. And it's, when we say those middle skills, it's really that class of skilled technicians and craftspeople that we're talking about. You know, the nurses, the mechanics, the pilots, the CNC operators, the EMTs, so on and so forth. And so I think community colleges are really front and center in providing those workers. And I don't think what's often always clearly understood is just about everything we do at community colleges is about workforce development. And so this morning what I'd like to do is start off by just kind of painting a broad landscape of all the different kinds of populations and segments we deal with in community colleges that relate to workforce development. And then John is going to do a more zero in on one community and kind of tell the Tillamook Bay story. But I think the beauty of community colleges is that we are really the educational institution that meets people wherever they are in their career or their quest for a career and can take them to the next level. So let me just start with our first segment, and that's high school students. And I think we've already talked about that a little bit more. But we stand with our K-12 partners, and the more we can do to expose high school students to post-secondary opportunities while they're still in high school, the better we'll be at creating that seamless transition that's also been talked about earlier. But specifically, what I think we can do in that role is provide opportunities for dual credit and dual enrollment, where high school students have the opportunity to take a class or a series of classes while they're still enrolled in high school. The beauty of that is it exposes them to higher ed. It also is a cost savings. At Portland Community College, we issued over 12,000 credits last year to high school students at free tuition. And so if you're a parent and your child can earn, you know, 6 or 9 or 12 college credits, that's going to be a big savings to you. I think that also then that leads into kind of the more, better, faster. It was mentioned earlier that a lot of people have met their high school requirements and that last semester of high school isn't too productive, and we can't afford to lose that time. The other thing is that we know that because of cutbacks, vocational ed in high schools has largely disappeared. By exposing young people to our career technical programs, that can heighten their interest. Also, we have a problem with the college going rate. It's going in the wrong direction, and this is another way, as I said, for that transition. Then we have a role in terms of reconnecting the high school dropouts. Each and every day in this state, we lose people who disconnect from high school before they earn their credential. It's the community colleges that bring those young people back in. So that's kind of the high school segment. But I do want to make the point that you know, what we're talking about is this pipeline that's a long transition. And right now we have a leaky pipeline. And it's at these transition points that we lose a lot of people. So that high school to some sort of post-secondary, be it an apprenticeship or college, is really important. So having people graduate from high school work-ready, college-ready is really, really important. We know that. But the next segment I want to focus on is also hugely important, because the fact of the matter is most of the people who are going to be in our labor market here in Oregon for the next 20 years are already in it. And we have a huge problem in terms of underprepared adults, and that's what I think Representative Dembro was referring to. We have approximately 400,000 adults in Oregon today that do not have a high school diploma, that are way beyond the reach of high school. It's the community college's job, and we are really the lifeline to those folks to skill them up. These are the folks that are chronically unemployed or bouncing from one low-wage job to another. But until we skill them up, they are not going to be ready to move into training in these middle-skill jobs because they don't have the basic reading, writing, math skills to do so. The other important component here that I want to point out is language acquisition. If you cannot speak English at a certain level, you are not going to be able to have a secure career. So it's the community college that is the main provider of adult basic education. And sometimes I think that's one of the rules that people aren't clear about. But it's those ABE, GED, ESL programs, and then bridge programs that really we are focused on those folks, because they are an important piece of our student population and an important piece of our future. Next, I think it's clear most people understand our transfer mission at the community college, and in fact many, many people in this state who go on to earn baccalaureates, master's degrees, and PhDs start at the community college. What isn't as well known perhaps is our career technical programs. And across the state we have hundreds and hundreds of certificate and 1-year and 2-year programs that are preparing people for all of those middle skill jobs that I talked about. I think in that area, our challenge as community colleges is to keep our current programs and curriculum and equipment up to date and aligned with industry standards, which is a big challenge. But then it's also to be able to create the new programs that we need as we have new emerging technologies and industries coming into Oregon. So for our existing programs, it's things like being able, in a very short amount of time, to take our auto mechanics program and infuse how to work with hybrid vehicles into it. In terms of new programs, it's things like bringing informatics online, solar voltaic technicians, wind turbine technicians, and those kinds of things. But I think you can be confident that community colleges across the state are working to make this happen. One of the things that we're trying to do a better job of, and we need to keep working on, is being able to serve the whole state. I think we've made some great strides in healthcare using distance ed. We're now, if you're over in Burns and you want an allied health program and there's not a great enough concentration to have one at that community college, you can take your gen ed at your home community college and have your clinical there, and then we can beam the content of the technical part of it from whatever community colleges offers it. I think I just want to mention that in solving this alignment and efficiency problem, Oregon's one of 5 states where we have moved to a kind of a career pathway framework where we're trying from high school through university to align our programs up and better meet the students' needs where they are and then also the employer needs. So what that means is kind of for the community colleges is we have taken most of our professional technical degrees and kind of what I refer to as chunking them up into smaller bites. So if you don't have the time to come get a two-year degree, we can at least get you on a pathway that leads to that degree and maybe the first chunk of it that will allow you to get an entry-level degree. Because I think this has been talked about before too, but it's important to realize that education has really changed. You know, when we grew up, you kind of did education just at one shot, whether it was finishing high school or going on to college. You went pretty much full time, you got as much as you got, and then you went to work, and that's it. Now, it's not a pipeline. It really is a cycle of people blending work and school, mainly because it's really, really expensive to go to school. And so we do see people cycling in and out. And so that's why those career pathways are so important, so that we can get people on a pathway and they can just continually work towards improving until they get to that degree. Another piece of that is having bridge programs so people that aren't college ready can then also get on that pathway. But I think since we've done that and the state board has authorized those shorter than 44 credit certificates, we have seen over 100 of those developed across the state in conjunction with our employers, because each chunk leads directly to a job in the labor market. And that has really, really made a difference, and I think that's where we need to go in the future. The fourth area I want to talk about is I think, a well-known area, and that's our traditional workforce development programs, and those are the federal programs like TANF and dislocated workers. I think we've got a proud history in this state since from 25 years ago when the first dislocated worker program on a community college campus was established at Lane Community College to today, where the community colleges have worked hand-in-hand with our other workforce partners to really provide coordinated services using those federal dollars. The biggest problem we have there is the federal disinvestment. We have just been really, really hurt by the cutbacks at the federal level in those programs. I'm heartened to see that the stimulus bill, I think, on the federal level is going to start repairing some of those. But again, in those programs, the thing that we have to realize is in the old days, we could take a welfare recipient or a dislocated worker and give them a minimal amount of training and get them back into the workforce. The bar keeps being raised. And for those folks, too, it's not enough to just give them 100 hours of training. We've got to get them on a pathway that will eventually lead to degrees and certificates. So that's really important. Another segment of community college work that relates directly to workforce development is in our non-credit arena. And again, I think sometimes this is misunderstood because we go from, you know, a one class maybe to pick up a software program you need from work to very, very high-end vendor certifications like Cisco or computer forensic, that we have people who come back that have bachelor's degrees and master's degrees that are taking those classes. I think at each community college, that non-credit package that we offer is directly tailored to the needs of our regional business community. So it looks different depending upon which part of the state you're in. I mean, just as a side note, in Portland, we've begun having discussions with the owner of a large bike shop operation in Portland because we have a need for bicycle mechanics because we're really into biking. Another area is our small business development centers, and I know you're aware that all the community colleges, we form a network. And the reason this is important is because we're a small business state, and the more that we can nurture entrepreneurs and help them be successful, they're the ones that are going to create more jobs for Oregonians. Just one small example. In Portland, we partner with the OSU's Food Innovation Center to work with entrepreneurs who want to bring food product to market, and it's really an important thing. The last area I want to talk about is customized customized training. And all community colleges have a customized training arm where we work directly with the business community in a wide, wide variety of partnerships to help them keep their incumbent workers globally competitive and keep up with technology and to keep their skills up. We do this through working with them through employer tuition reimbursement programs so that they can send their folks to us. In Portland, our Institute for Health Professionals works directly with all the hospitals to do the continuing education and professional certification of a wide swath of allied health professionals. Whether it's lean manufacturing management training, we do it under contract, and I think we do it really, really well. Then community colleges engage in a wide variety of special projects. One of the ones I'll just point to in Portland that happened this year is we had a real problem with welders, and we have a huge welding program at Rock Creek campus that runs from 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, but we had huge waiting lists. Our partner metro colleges all had programs, but we just couldn't meet the demand. So we partnered with Vigor Industrial down at the shipyards on Swan Island, and together we built or refurbished a training center, and now we are having that center open. Businesses on Swan Island use it during the day for their incumbent workers, and then at night we're running our regular accredited welding curriculum there so that we can alleviate that welding shortage. We also work when new businesses come into town. Recently, in Portland, we've seen Genentech build a fill and manufacturing plant there, as well as we're becoming a place for solar, and SolarX and Solar World have come to town. With our other state agents, partners, and the economic folks, what we do is really make the case to these new businesses that we do have the trained workforce, but then when they actually get here and they build their plants, we train their new workforce. But I want to make the point, it's not just about training the initial folks. It's about making sure that we're incorporating their ongoing needs into our educational program at the college. So for both those companies, what we developed with them was, again, the first chunk of a two-year degree, which was, in the case of Genentech, for instance, a 13-credit biotech certificate that prepares people for entry-level jobs at Genentech, as well as it's generic enough for entry-level jobs in other bioscience companies. A two-year degree now in bioscience technology, but then building these bridge classes that prepare those underprepared adults then to be able to do the credit-level work also. So I think those are just a couple of examples. As you can see, especially in economic development, you know, it's not just about taxes and land anymore. It really, really, the number one thing is your workforce and how innovative and creative are they going to be. But what I hope I've done for you in a short amount of time is just kind of paint this picture of why community colleges are so important. I mean, we really are the safety net for a lot of people in workforce development, but we're also the first responder in terms of at any stage of your career where you need something. And I think we are the economic engine that is going to drive us so that we will be poised for the recovery. So, thank you.
Nan, thank you so very, very much for your presentation and all of the very good work that you do, continue to do, and have done for many, many years. Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Poppe, just a quick question, hopefully. John from Associated Oregon Industries had brought up an important point, and then you touched on specific curricula that you come up with, programs for Genentech and Columbia Gorge Community College's WIN Technician program. Do you take into consideration when you formulate these specific programs the possibility of the accreditation through the course, those pieces of any particular curriculum to work toward an advanced degree? Or are they just specific, they stand alone, and they really don't apply to anything?
Well, I think this is one area where we've made great strides in workforce development. We've really learned our lesson. What I'd tell you is 20 years ago, what we would do, because it was the most expedient at the time, is we'd go in and we'd put together a non-credit, very proprietary, get them trained, and then we'd go away. But specifically for both Genentech and the solar companies, we don't do that anymore, because what we realize is degrees and certificates matter in this world, much more so than they did, say, 20 years ago. And so what we do, and it's challenging because there is some proprietary information, some specific skills, but we design training that is then becomes part of a one-year or two-year degree at the community college, but then also is then transferable. There shouldn't be any terminal degrees. So if you get in terms of Genentech, if you come in and you go that first term specifically because you want to go to Genentech, that's fine. You've got the training and you go. But then you also have 13 credits towards the Portland Community College Bioscience Associate degree that then articulates to our university. And that's the same case for in terms of solar kind of lines up very nicely with our microelectronics degree programs. And so what we did is create an offshoot that specifically is now an associate's degree in solar voltaic technology. And again, to get into those companies in entry level, you take the first chunk of that.
Reps Holvey and Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm fascinated by your presentation and wanted to apologize for jumping up and down and to the committee as well. My phone kind of went off a couple times. I don't know if anybody heard it. I tried to turn it off, but I'm an excited new grandfather as of a few minutes ago. I wanted to apologize. It wasn't that I'm just rude.
Congratulations, Representative Foley. First time, Grandpa?
Yes.
Whoa. Congratulations.
I've been here 8 times. Yes.
11.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say what a pleasure it is to have Dr. Poppe here. I've wasted a lot of time in committee meetings, but I will say when I think back to one of the most productive committees I've ever been on, it was the committee that hired Dr. Poppe and lured her away, let's say, from Mount Hood Community College over to where she belonged at Portland. She's an angel. She flies at the 30,000-foot level, sees the big picture, but also has a big heart. And her comments regarding what we often refer to as the non-traditional workforce, I would really urge you colleagues to take to heart, because our ability to address that population is going to be the key to our success as a state. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about one population that we haven't really talked about yet that I think is very important and is going to become more important, and that is our veteran population. That is, those who are, who've been in the military and in many cases have developed skills there in the military and then come back and need to be reintegrated into the workforce, need some official certification, credentialing, and, the role of the community colleges in making sure that happens and how we're addressing trying to make the credentialing process a little more flexible and what the challenges are to that and the prospects of that. So I'd like you to address that. And another thing that I'd like you to address is, one of the largest employers in the state, of course, is government, right? And so I'm wondering what the role of the community colleges is in providing ongoing continuing education for government, whether it be local, county, or state. And perhaps is that also something that we could address in order to avoid duplication and greater effectiveness?
You always ask the tough questions, Representative Dembro. But certainly I think our community college enrollments are really bulging across the state, and a piece of that is returning veterans. And as you said, it's really important that we be able to take the skills that they've earned in the military and get them into their right career path and get them on a way to degrees and certificates. I think it's a challenge when people come to the community college with life experience or training that they've received that hasn't been in our typical accreditation in terms of certificates and degrees. What community colleges are doing is working on what kind of in the field is known as credit for prior learning. So, and it's different at different community colleges, and it's challenging because, you know, you've got to keep the integrity of the academic credential whole. But what some places are doing is trying to have people put together a portfolio of other training that they've done and their life experience, and then have a faculty member assess that and to see if that equates to some elective credit. Some colleges allow people to take tests in subject areas, and then if you pass the test, then you can be awarded the credit. But I do think it's really, really important just in terms of making our educational delivery systems flexible and being able to meet the needs of the students that are coming to us. But veterans are a really, really important piece of that. I think that your other question was
about, you know, in a very planful way, dealing with government.
All right. Yeah, interestingly enough, I know in Portland we have customized training contracts with the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and TriMet, just to name a few, that are basically slots that allow them to say, we're going to use Portland Community College for this much of our training budget every year, and each year we're going to tell you what our compelling issues are, and then we want you to put classes together to address those. That's kind of how our health institute works, and it becomes very, very efficient and effective because we have the ability to offer classes anytime, night or day. The other thing that I think is really important that community colleges have a role in is working directly with employers around tuition reimbursement programs. I mean, the reality is, if you look at what business spends on training their employees, it's billions of dollars across this country. Most companies have some sort of tuition reimbursement. What we're trying to do as community colleges is say, allow us to work with you so that we can make sure, instead of your employees just coming and taking a hodgepodge of classes, we can help them direct into classes that line up with their interests, your interests, but then really lead to meaningful credentials. Because I think it's those meaningful credentials that are going to be so important to all of us in Oregon.
Thank you very much. I'm not seeing additional questions or comments at this point. I'd now like to turn it over to Professor Carnahan. Is it also President?
It is, thank you.
Welcome, yeah. President Carnahan.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Carnahan. I'm the president of Tillamook Bay Community College. It's always difficult to follow an angel with a big heart. What I'll attempt to do is begin to tie together what you've heard all morning from the private business sector, both large and small, and from the 30,000-foot level, the mission of Oregon's community colleges. Although economic development may not be called out directly in the mission statements of community colleges, increasingly local community and business leaders, particularly in small rural communities, have relied on the community college as a major driver of economic health. Conversely, I think community colleges have recognized that their relationships and their partnerships can significantly improve their ability to deliver the larger educational needs of a community, which is in the mission of Oregon's community colleges. And when the college's investments are leveraged with the private sector's investment of the business community, and we can accomplish this mission, it improves economic vitality of communities, citizens, and with that, Oregon wins. I'd like to share with you some specific examples of how what you heard this morning really works on the ground. keep in mind, Tillamook Bay Community College is the smallest community college in the state of Oregon. Oh. It is a very small community college. In another life, I worked as a president of a community college in Oregon. I had three outreach centers, and all three were larger than Tillamook Bay Community College. So put that into perspective and think what, after you hear what can happen in a small rural community, what can happen with the other 16 community colleges in Oregon to deliver workforce and job training. Let me begin with a partnership that happened when I arrived as their interim president. The second day I was there, I got a call from Stimson Lumber who said, can you hook me up with someone from Lower Columbia Community College who has an industrial millwright program for millwrights because you don't offer one and we need training. I said, well, if you need training, we can offer it. So we don't need to call Lower Columbia Community College. As a result of that discussion, the second day I was there, Stimson Lumber offers two scholarship, full job, and education scholarships to two of their seniors out of Tillamook High School every year that enroll in a new industrial maintenance technology program at Tillamook Bay Community College. We're on now the beginning of the fourth year. We have eight students that were scholarshiped as seniors out of the high school, work full-time at the mill, are enrolled in a BOLI-approved apprenticeship program for industrial millwrights. In order to make it work, I couldn't do it with two students, so I immediately called Hampton Lumber and said, gee, do you have problems with millwrights? Well, yeah, that's a big deal. We compete all the time. I said, well, we're going to offer a program here. The courses we're going to offer this term and next term. Feel free to send anybody you want. Now, Hampton can't be outdone by Stimson, so they're offering scholarships. Recognizing that there were some skills as industrial maintenance technician that the creamery might have, which is Tillamook Cheese, I called Tillamook Cheese and said, you know, we're offering this course, and if you need OSHA training and these other things that we may do, well, they immediately jumped on it, and we had enough critical mass to begin that program. As a result of the Industrial Maintenance Technology Program, now training millwrights for Hampton and Stimson Lumber, Tillamook Cheese said, you know, we have a bigger problem with limited maintenance electricians and plant electricians. And there's a local apprenticeship council, and, you know, could you offer something like that? I said, well, yeah, there's a couple electrical courses required in the maintenance program. Is there something we could do to broaden that? Well, as a result, the local apprenticeship committee combined and includes now industrial maintenance and electrical. We now have 22 students enrolled in a limited maintenance electricity program, of which some are millwrights, but the majority of them are creamery employees. We now have a separate program that's fully approved for industrial maintenance and plant electricians, as well as an industrial maintenance millwright program. So That happened in Tillamook County with the three larger employers. Those were their needs. They identified their needs. There's a shortage, and we're beginning to do the education and training for those jobs. Dealing with the local apprenticeship council has developed a relationship whereby the BOLI has allowed a youth apprenticeship program for the Creamery Association, the Tillamook Cheese, that will allow high school age students to enroll in an electrical program while in high school and be in the mill. Oftentimes it's difficult to put a young person, because of the BOLI and safety standards, actually in the mill. With exceptions through BOLI, we're able to put two students a year in that program, Tillamook Cheese, in an apprenticeship program where they're enrolled in both college level, high school credit, so they're getting dual credit, and trying out that profession to see if that's what they want to do when they graduate. So that kind of gets to the discussion we had earlier about apprentices and work in the field and getting some experience, as well as providing job training for the critical needs of the local industry. Tillamook County PUD is a countywide PUD. They do a lot of training. I met several months ago with the PUD, and who is concerned, like every other industry, about how are they going to fill the needs of their retiring and aging workforce. And they had heard what was happening with Stimson and Hampton and the Creamery Association, and they said, you know, gee, can the local community college deliver training for the PUD? Well, obviously there are some crossovers in some of their professions with programs that were already had. But what we're right now is doing an inventory of the training that they provide all of their employees. They send them out of county, sometimes out of state for training, doing an inventory of where they have their training, where they require their training, what the needs are, and then the college will look at that and try to leverage again their needs with other community needs to provide education and training. As President Poppe said, we all have small business development centers. Tillamook County also had an economic development council. It appeared to me that the economic development council and the small business development council were doing much of the same thing. They didn't talk much with each other, and so we had convened the advisory group from the small business development center and the economic development council, and as a result of that discussion, the college now contracts and manages both the economic development and Small Business Development Center and a one-stop center downtown. We combine the positions, so there's one director who a percentage of his time is Small Business Development, a percentage of his time is Economic Development. There is a local membership that has a board that we work with besides the college board. But that's simply leveraged something for that community that's seeing results that they had never seen before. Obviously the college offers small business management programs as a part of the Small Business Development Center. Usually we had three or four businesses enrolled through the Small Business Development Center. This year we have 12 small businesses enrolled in that program because the Economic Development Council has something to offer when they're going out talking to their members. They're doing more than land inventory and trying to do business startups. They're dealing with business retention and educational needs because oftentimes those businesses need education and training, not just a business plan. And I mean, they think they need a business plan. Well, the first thing they think is, where can I find a lender to borrow money? And so we talk about how maybe we can really enhance that. We have a partnership with the three school districts with a hospitality and culinary arts program. We have a culinary arts program where we have enrolled high school age students and college students. We have a full-time instructor in culinary arts. I send him with the Small Business Development and Economic Development Center director to all of the restaurants in Tillamook County, which are number, and they're all small businesses. This is a professional in culinary arts who not only can help them professionally with other issues besides business, it just makes a nice combination. So by leveraging all of these services, it makes a huge difference. The community doesn't care. They do care, but they really care more about the service than who's delivering it. So whether it's an economic development center that's funded by the county or a small business development center that's funded by the colleges and small business administration, what they care is, do they get the service in the local community? And that's what we're trying to leverage.
Amen.
OSU Extension. In another life, I had a pretty large connection with Oregon State University and learned how those partnerships can work. As we're building a brand new college campus in Tillamook County, we began to work with Extension at Oregon State University and develop a relationship whereby we could offer services that were similar in ag and home economics and other areas of the services that OSU offers through Extension. Through that discussion, I met with the president of Oregon State University, and we're actually considering through their engagement initiative at Oregon State University, opening open campus in Tillamook, building another building right next to the new community college campus that would house Extension, and the extension of all of the programs through the Extension model that Oregon State University offers in a rural community, which allows that continuation. The ESDs and school districts are critical partners to us. We've talked about that. As a result of building this new community college campus in Tillamook, we're also going to be building two outreach centers on the site of Neocony and Nestucca High School. The school districts will give us the property to build a center right next door to each high school to, again, get high school age students started earlier, provide access for local communities in North and South County, and really begin to engage high school age students at a much earlier age in college-level courses. 3 years ago, we had 5 students enrolled in a dual enrollment program where they were taking college-level classes and high school classes. This year, we had 95 students enrolled in a dual admissions program with high school and college. Last June, at commencement, we had 2 Tillamook High School graduates also graduate from Tillamook Bay Community College at the same week and went on. So it can happen. The other thing we're doing with the school districts is we're actually, rather than build a vocational technical facility at this new community college in Tillamook County, it doesn't make sense to, in a size of a community that large, to have 2 welding labs, 2 fabrication labs, 2 construction technology programs. So the college is remodeling and upgrading the current professional technical building at Tillamook High School. It'll be a joint use facility for the community college and Tillamook High School and the Oconee and Nistuck High Schools. We have a consortium with the 3 school districts and the ESD where we offer career programs in health, construction technology, and hospitality management. So students are bused from the Oconee and Nistuck to a central location in their junior and senior years, taking both college and high school classes. When they graduate from high school, they got a year of college and finish their program at Tillamook Bay Community College. Finally, let me close with WorkSource Oregon, our partners in the community that deal with employed and unemployed. Tillamook County is no exception. I think President Poppe said there were 300,000 or 400,000 Oregonians without a high school diploma. Educational attainment level in this state is very low. For the first time in my 35 or 40 years in the business, the educational attainment level of those over 42 years of age in this state is greater than those under 42 years of age. That's a problem when we're trying to move this mm-hmm. other direction. And that's a problem in Tillamook County. We have over 3,500 adults over 26 years of age that don't have a high school diploma. So when there is a large unemployment rate in Tillamook County, a good share of them don't have a high school diploma. They go to the employment department through WorkSource Oregon, go through an orientation, about an 8 or 9 hour program through a partner in WorkSource Oregon where they learn how to apply for unemployment, learn how to do some interviewing skills, resume writing, some basic computer technology skills. During that orientation of unemployment, Tillamook Bay Community College is in the room delivering that part of that orientation and suggesting that this job readiness is much more than just writing a resume and learning how to look for a job on a computer. They need basic skills. And so we're at the ground level when they're unemployed, trying to provide some continuous opportunities for them in a non-threatening way and say, you know, in most cases, looking for another job is not the answer. In most cases, additional education is the answer, and there isn't a better time than today for them to do that because there just simply aren't going to be jobs for them to find with the skills they have, and when jobs start returning, they're going to be competing with people with skills much greater than them. So that is kind of a thumbnail sketch of how it works on the ground. I think if you try to take some nuggets from what you heard from business and industry earlier and kind of what the mission of Oregon's community colleges is, this kind of shows you kind of just a touch of how it can be done. And Chairman Witt, Representative Huffman, if there is a $250,000 stimulus package that goes to job training in the state of Oregon and not capital construction, you couldn't find a better investment than your local community colleges.
Amen.
Let's make that million.
Subcommittee members, our carriage is about to turn into a pumpkin here. Are there any quick questions or comments? Yes, Vice Chair Huffman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Are there any, and I've heard a lot of great testimony this week from you two, from Frank Toda, from Jim at COCC, and others, talking about how they're working very closely with their local high schools. Do you perceive that there are any barriers that prevent relationships around the state between community colleges and high schools to have that dual enrollment opportunity?
No, I mean, I think we've provided the framework to allow that happen. I mean, I think the barrier will be if you start competing for resources. I mean, so as long as we can leave that out of the equation and really leave it open, I think everybody's going to work well together.
And I think we've heard that message several times today as well. Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really kind of excited to hear that the way your programs are working and partnering, especially I take some interest in apprenticeship programs myself, and working with Boley and the industrial millwright programs. I'm curious at what kind of investment the community colleges made into that program and how many people it's serving.
Well, the numbers vary. Classes range from 8 to 22 in electrical class. The initial investment that was made was a $20,000 investment from Stimson Lumber, a $20,000 investment from Tillamook Hampton Lumber, a $20,000 investment from Tillamook Bay Community College, a $25,000 grant from Boley, and a $50,000 economic development grant from State of Oregon, and I don't remember what agency it was. Economic Development, I guess. Economic Development, yeah. That's kind of how we got it going.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, just to add to Representative Holvey's question, the department, CCWD, joined with Boley so that we could add, so Boley could actually add an individual to their ranks to be the coordinator of these efforts, and there are a handful of them across the state. There's resource there for that coordinator, and then there was some money that was also available for grants to entities that wanted to take on this challenge. So it's a great partnership. We need more and more of them.
John, I just want to comment on the job that you do, and your examples of the training classes that on the run you developed for the forest products industry. You made several employers viable. You gave the skills to individual workers that probably has impacted their job tenure as well as the family income. This is by every measure a success story. But as important, I think we're in the room earlier when we heard the mention that Vestas, for lack of engineers for research and development, left Oregon. There's no doubt that probably in part, maybe even a large part, is the size of the communities involved, Tillamook versus Portland. But nonetheless, Stimson and Hampton, their first reaction was to go to you. Vestas packed their bags and went to Texas. And we need to change that. And you've done a tremendous job, and we need to be able to replicate people going to you first across the state. I thank you very much. Committee members, let's see, a couple of items. I'm going to ask that Kevin visit with Representatives Esquivel and Dembro to avoid any quorum. It'll be just the two of you to discuss how we might link up with the Education Committee. And Kevin, you have an announcement as well as what we're going to be doing next time we meet.
Thank you, Chairman Witt. Two things. First, next Tuesday when we meet, we're going to have representatives of the labor community coming in. We have already confirmed members of the electricians, sheet metal, and plumbers unions who will be coming in. I'm trying to dot some I's and cross some T's with the carpenters and hope to have that finished up today. So that will be next Tuesday. As well as a little birdie whispered by ear, Cam let me know yesterday, and I thank her for that. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and I believe it's Hearing Room F, the full Ways and Means Committee is going to be hearing a presentation concerning workforce development. I believe the Employment Department, Boley, as well as the community colleges will be giving presentations. So interested parties, members of committee, your staff, go ahead and listen in. I'll kind of keep an ear on it as well. And as far as Representative Esquivel and Representative Dembro, I'll follow up with you as far as our proposed bills.
Want to send us an email on that time of place.
And just one thing. John, can we get a copy, if possible, of the study that AOI put out on recommendations for workforce development? If you have one that you can share.
It's just a part of our policy package.
Okay.
I'll make sure you get that.
That would be great. That would be great. Thank you very much. Committee members, with that, we stand adjourned until Tuesday. Don't forget to...